When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great future. We're talking real money.
You know, Tom, we should just constantly have audio rolling whenever we do pretty much anything. I mean, just have any conversation, because I think it would just be entertaining. We just spent the last 10 minutes arguing over whether a word is a word. We did.
You're only bringing this up because I was wrong. And I know. I admit it. I was wrong.
Yeah. If you were right, it would not get mentioned.
The editing floor would be filled with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was wrong.
You know, the editing floor is now just electrons.
I know. Whatever it is, waves. I'd be there cut to pieces.
All right, everybody.
This case, you were correct. So I'm going to just go right there and say it. I was wrong.
Let me just reemphasize the fact that I was correct.
That's like scratching the chalkboard to me. I hate that.
You just don't like the word reemphasized.
I really don't.
He thinks it's redundant.
I think it is redundant because you're emphasizing already. Why do you need to reemphasize something? I don't know. I stand corrected. I was wrong. I didn't think it was a word, but you, of course, went to the Oxford Dictionary. You went to Merriman. Finally, surpassing their rowing team, you went to the University of Southern California for expertise. So it's all there.
I mean, how many members of your family went to USC? And
a lot.
How many members didn't?
Not on the rowing team, though, I'm telling you right now. So,
all right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Talking Real Grammar. I'm sorry. Talking Real Money. No, that's what we do. We talk real money. I'm Don McDonald here in the Florida studio. That's Tom Koch there in the Bellevue, Washington studio. Can't say Washington, really, because you could be in Spokane.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed you're having the client thing on the 3rd of August, and you made sure that I was in Spokane.
I want to keep you at arm's length. Happening. Yeah, there you go. You could fly over and fly back. Get your crazy silver truck. That wouldn't be a bad idea. Fly over, do the show, hang out.
Yeah.
Go back and get the silver bullet. You could do it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our little get-together where we talk about money issues. We try to answer some of your questions and help you deal with money better. And if you're looking for fancy answers, strategies, complexity,
cool
lies
stuff,
and obfuscation, the latest hot tips. Yeah, all of that. You have come to the wrong place. Please turn your radio you don't have one of those anymore.
Down, off,
yeah,
click.
Just click that button in your car on your Apple Play, CarPlay thingy, and go to something else. Because we're here to tell you the truth about money and investing and try to do the things that need to be done to make sure that you are in a position to succeed. And you being in a position to succeed really means the advice you get should always be 100% in your best interests. Now, for years, the U.S. Department of Labor has been trying very hard to require that anyone who provides advice on any type of qualified retirement plan not just act in your best interest, as the SEC tried to pass off as a regulation, but actually act as your true fiduciary at all times. They passed a law or made a rule to this effect several years ago that got battered and beaten by the courts because the securities industry hates the idea of not being able to sell you an annuity inside your 403b plan. Now, the Labor Department is going to give it another go.
And here's why, by the way. It's so clear. I'll give you a couple of examples. One client was sold a fixed annuity in a one-time transaction when she was 48. She invested most of her retirement money into that product, which had an interest rate of less than 2.5% and a surrender period of 7 years. That is a horrendous, awful product that you should not be sold. Here's another one. Another client who had just $10,000 in an IRA, individual retirement account, was sold a whole life insurance policy with an annual premium of $20,000. Couldn't even afford it.
Wait a minute. I mean, they were sold a whole life insurance policy?
Yeah.
In a retirement?
Inside of an IRA.
I didn't even know you could do that. Well, that's something you shouldn't even be able to do. Oh, there it goes. I can feel the anger percolating up again.
And
this is
so
infuriating.
It really is. And we just looked at a 403B plan where the average expense ratio for the funds in there was a hair under 2. Pardon me, not 0.02, 2%.
2.00%.
Yeah, you see all kinds of, and thank you to those people that listen to the podcast, ask for help, and we tell them, don't do that. That's just purely awful. But this goes back, and you've shorted it a little bit. This actually goes back to the financial crisis of 2008, because coming out of that was the rules making where they said, we really got to fix this. We really got to make sure people are getting advice that's in their interest, not in the interest of the quote unquote financial advisor. So it started there. In 2016, it was handed, or pardon me, earlier than that, 2016, Donald Trump became president. They struck it down in 2018 by an appeals court in the fifth. You get the idea. You said the industry hates it. I think it's silly because honestly, as somebody on the other side of that argument, it makes it pretty easy when people walk in the door and say, I'm working with that person and here's what they did to me. I say, don't work with those people because they're not 100% fiduciaries.
The fact that everybody would, if ever, everyone would have to act as a fiduciary would be bad for us.
Yeah.
Because right now our business is so much easier when we know most of the people who are providing advice aren't always acting as fiduciaries. It makes our job so much easier. But that's not why we do things,
no,
nor why we talk to you. We talk to you because we want the whole process to be geared toward you.
Fair. Treated
just
well.
Fair. And
listen to the numbers.
It can't be fair because you don't know when you're being sold a crappy insurance policy.
No, how would you? Listen to the numbers. The most recent they have is 2020. 5.7 million people rolled $620 billion into IRAs. Now, how much of that $620 billion went into the aforementioned annuities, into crummy plan, into all kinds of stuff they did not need? And frankly, if everyone had to live up to the fiduciary standard, they couldn't have been sold instead of the best interest that was enacted by the SEC back in 2019. I gave you a couple of examples. I could give you tons more. But every advisor should have to live up to a statement in writing that says that they will live up to this standard. There's no question. And most of the people, and I know you're listening to our podcast, so thank you for that. So you're not part of this group, but most people don't know what that means. They don't understand.
Listening to our podcast doesn't mean they know it.
That's true. But many of them do, because I know many of you. And thank you for paying attention, because we've been talking about this issue for what, 25 years? We've been telling you longer. I mean, we've been telling you don't hire anyone unless they are a fee only fiduciary advisor, because fee-based means they can sell you products. You've got to, part two of this, Don, is this maybe an easier way to know, right? We have a form on our website that we could give you that people, that some advisors will fill out and some will not.
Most won't.
Yeah. They look and go, no. But at the very least, if you ask them, how are you getting paid? That at least will clarify things, because interestingly enough, in this article in the New York Times, where they're talking about this, the new rule, which is going to be apparently out here in the next few weeks, they quote Janie Montgomery Scott, a financial services firm in Philadelphia, said fiduciary status was highly technical when it came to retirement and other qualified accounts. It depended on services chosen. Here's the quote. Unless we agree in writing, we do not act as a fiduciary under retirement laws. The firm openly admits that, yeah, there may be some things here that don't live up to the best interest of the client. It might be our better interest because we're going to make more money doing that. And this gets back to something else we've talked about so long. I think there are a lot of good people that work in this industry that work for bad firms. So the institution tells them, go do this. And to the point where people, I think, believe it. Like, well, yeah, they've been telling me that for 20 years. Has to be right. And it's not a problem to put somebody's IRA in a IRA in a whole life insurance policy, which it just seems absolutely insane. So you got to know if your advisor is 100% fiduciary. You got to know how they're getting paid. And you need to understand what's fair in today's environment as well. Because frankly, even there, Don, we just looked this up for somebody in California. We looked at fee-only fiduciary advisors, some of whom were charging 2.5%, which a year, that's outrageous. You don't need to pay that. We found another one who was not a fiduciary that were being paid 2% a year just for managing the 25 stocks they'd bought 15 years ago. I mean, that is not, you're not getting a fair shake there, that kind of thing. So you got to know this.
And this is all quibbling over details, really tiny little details. I'll give you an example. Right now, under current Labor Department regulations, if an advisor sells you an annuity in a 401k or a IRA or a 403b or any of those, if they just tell you to get into it, the first thing, just sell it to you, that is not, they are not required to act as fiduciaries. Under the new rule, anytime they give advice on anything, including annuities, period, they would be required to act in your best interest. What that means is if they put an annuity into an IRA or a 401k or into a qualified retirement plan, they would have to be able to prove that that annuity product was better for you than any other product they could offer you.
Which would be hard to do.
Which would be impossible to do.
But, you know, again, you run into this conflict between making more money or making less money for these folks, right? Because we ran into somebody else recently who was sold a fairly substantial annuity in one afternoon, and the person that sold it to them made $12,000 in an afternoon. Now, Don and I do not make $12,000 in any afternoon that I'm aware of. Maybe you do with your voice work. No,
voice work doesn't pay that well.
Okay. I mean, so
no,
conflict there, right? Or if they could have put her in a few index funds and that person would have made a lot less money. But here's the argument that drives me nuts. Maybe you can tell me what you think. The argument against this, against requiring every advisor to act in the client's best interest is the more stringent ERISA standard would cause customers to lose access to advice.
That's absolute unadulterated baloney because they're not getting advice. They're getting a sales pitch and then the salesperson moves on. These people are not acting as advisors on an ongoing basis and helping you rebalance your portfolio. No, they sell you something and they are gone. They're not there for you to call and talk to about taking out the right amount and tax situations and rebalancing your portfolio and doing all the things you need to do along the way. They're not going to hold your hand. As a matter of fact, if you call and you go, I think it's time to do something else, I'm afraid
guess
they'll go,
what?
Sure, we'd love to do something else for you right now and get another commission.
They action is good
you
for
you.
You
are not going to lose advice. In fact,
I think
I believe
you're spot on.
There's plenty of advice. There's plenty of advice out there. There are a lot of people like us you can talk to on podcasts and radio shows. There are the firms themselves that provide these products, Fidelities and Vanguards and the like. These no-load groups will provide help to you the same on at least a comparable level to what you're going to get from a stock broker at Montgomery Scott.
Yeah. And here's the thing. When you're accumulating money, when you're adding, I'm not sure you need an advisor. You need a portfolio, no doubt about that, which Don just said, we give them, Paul Merriman gives them. We're not the only people to give those out. When you are getting close to retirement or retiring, then you need an advisor and you need a fee-only fiduciary advisor.
And then you can hire one.
That's exactly right. So I think that's a very spurious argument. But I really like what Arthur B. Labey, the vice dean and professor at Rutgers Law School, said. A relationship of trust, vulnerability, and reliance calls for the protections afforded by a fiduciary duty. I think that's spot on, because when you go see somebody, everyone assumes that they're going to act in my best interest. That's the problem.
Because other professionals have that obligation, blanket obligation. Doctors, blanket obligation to act as a fiduciary. There's no exception for them. Lawyers absolutely must act in your best interest, the best interests of their client. CPAs, accountants are required to act in the best interests of their clients. It's only in this professional industry that you have this carve out for commission salespeople. And Debbie and I were talking about it in the car today, about the training we got when I was training to be a broker at Dean Witter and when she was training to be a broker. The training we got consisted of all the knowledge we needed to know to pass the test, cramming, in other words, for the exam, and then weeks and weeks of training on salesmanship.
How to get people to sign on the line, which is
dotted. Not how to provide advice. That was never, by the way, that was never part of the training. Providing ongoing advice to clients as a true financial advisor, not part of the curriculum.
Doesn't happen. Manipulation of people is there. So, yeah, fee only. So
now you have to take 100%. Care of yourself. You must take care of yourself.
You do. You have to know.
And let's just come up with a blanket rule for everybody right now, because I know it's difficult. You're going, well, what do I get? Blanket rule. If it has the name of an insurance company in the product, or if you hear the word annuity bandied about, or life, even worse, you do not use it, period. You do not use it in your 401k, 403b, 457, IRA, Roth IRA, or any of those vehicles, SEP, or whatever it might be. You just don't use it.
I'll go one step further.
Good. Terminate
the relationship with extreme prejudice. I think it's over. That is not an advisor. That is a salesperson, and you should not work with them, period. Extreme prejudice.
Doesn't that require hiring a hitman?
It's redundant. I'm back to the re-emphasized thing. So sorry. All right. Let's see if we can get time for a couple questions here. Gonzalo writes us from Los Banos, California. Says, and this is an old question.
Is that the bathrooms?
It sounds like it, but I'm not going to go there.
¿Dónde está Los Baños?
Now you're going to get us in trouble. And this is an old question, so I apologize, Gonzalo. We did not answer. He says, I sent you one before. You didn't answer. I'm sending it again. All right. You got our attention this time.
Tom's in charge of the paper.
I know. I feel bad. Well, we get a lot of questions.
Now he's wrong again.
This is a painful episode. I'll tell you what. Let's see. I sent earlier about requiring funding for a roof replacement for my 30-year-old home recently plagued by recurrent roof leaks. Okay. So what we're looking for is money here to pay for a new roof. Mm-hmm. Prior email, Tom, was asking your opinion regarding a home equity loan versus a home equity line of credit. Home equity loan versus HELOC, which are two different things.
So similar, though.
Well, but equity loan is actually an amount of money
up front.
Isn't it a fixed rate? That's like you're going to get 8%. And by the way, I looked it up.
Yeah.
8.8% today for the best one I can find.
Yeah, I got this paper the other day from a local bank.
Yeah, hold how on, much?
Hold on. Let's see. This is from Regions Bank. HELOC.
Not a HELOC. This is home equity line. This is home equity loan.
Costs, 9 to 16%.
Good Lord. Yeah. All right. And a home equity loan, as I say, generally is a lump sum too. They're going to give you a certain amount. A HELOC is a line of credit. It's a revolving, like I could borrow it, I could pay it back, et cetera. The best HELOC rate I could find was 7.4. So you can go to see Don. How much of that is yours? You get a little kickback for selling that?
No, I get nothing.
Okay.
In fact, I would say do not go to them for it. She said, we don't even try to sell these.
Really? Shocker there.
That's why the rate's high. We don't want you to buy them.
We don't want to give you any money. But he says a third option was brought to my attention. This idea of securing a loan using my 457 retirement plan of work. Can you discuss the pros and cons of all three options? The repair is $50,000. He has about a year left on his current home mortgage, he says, intentions to pay that off, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think? HELOC, home loan, or borrowing against the 457? I'm not a fan of borrowing against your retirement.
No, I would absolutely not borrow against the 457. I mean, I don't.
This is a bit out of our area of specialty.
I guess, because I was going to say, I know that it's not legal to use your 401k plan as a loan. This must be something.
Well, you can borrow against it inside the plan.
Inside the 457.
Yeah.
But it depends on what the rate is, I guess.
And I also think the term, in other words, how long until you're going to have the money to pay it back?
You can borrow up to 50%
of your holdings.
Of your balance.
Well,
let's see what kind of interest rates are out there.
That depends on the plan, I believe. It's usually written in by what the interest rate is going to be. And it might be, you know, some rate plus some percentage.
Oh, that's interesting. Loan repayments are made with after-tax dollars, which means you'll pay taxes again on the interest portion of your loan.
And just to go back to the HELOC versus the loan, there it would depend on me. Don said the rate. Yes, that's important, but it also depend on the term. In other words, if you're going to be able to pay that off in a shorter period of time, I'd probably go with the revolving line of too. Credit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you can pay it back. It'd be a little different with a loan. So, boy, I hope that helps.
But you do pay the interest back to yourself.
Yeah, right. Yes. A loan on your... Yeah, it's messy, though. I wouldn't do that.
I'm starting to rethink my position.
I thought you were helping the bank there try to sell some of their stuff.
No. I just need to know the pros and cons of this. It doesn't look like it's a bad deal.
You're going to have the discipline to pay that back because that is your retirement. The other issue I have.
But you've got to pay every loan back anyway. You gotta pay it back.
You're taking this out of your retirement, though. I don't know. I personally would rather have a wall between one and the other. Yeah. So I'd rather
I got to tell you, personally, I would be, if I had a big 457.
Yeah, he doesn't say the amount. Yeah.
Because I'm paying the interest back to myself and it's not deductible interest that you pay to the bank because it's not on your primary
residence
mortgage. Well, wait a minute. Maybe it would be. No, I don't think a second is. I'm terrible with taxes.
Well, and they messed around with it in the last tax change, I believe, too. So,
yeah. Wow, $50,000 for a roof. Sure glad I got mine.
That does not surprise me. Yeah. I've seen more. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can. You can deduct second mortgage interest still. So, there's a benefit there, too.
There is no correct answer there. It really depends, as I say, on the best deal you can find on how quickly you can pay it back. Yeah, that'd be important to me as well.
But I got to tell you, if you can pay it back quickly, again, that would lead me back to the 457.
Yeah.
Because if the interest is coming back to me.
Yep.
And of course, then when you take it out, you're going to pay taxes on that later, but you're paying it back to you, which means you're earning on that. I'd be real tempted to look at the 457.
All right.
I got to say, I would.
Let's squeeze one more in here from Ted in Renton, Washington. I received my brokerage statement, which showed dividends from my Avantis ETF, AVUV and AVGE. Must have misunderstood when you stated ETFs have fewer or no tax events. I don't think we said no.
No. Capital gains distributions.
Right. Correct.
If the stocks within the portfolio pay out dividends, cash dividends.
Yeah,
have to be
no way around it
distributed to the shareholders, but they don't have to distribute capital gains distributions because they don't take capital gains along the way.
Exactly. It's a different, the way they're holding the securities allows them to hand it from one person to another without selling.
I can't imagine it would be very big.
Well, it depends how big your holding is. But
but I just mean as a percentage.
I'm looking a couple percent, maybe.
No, on a small cap fund, because small companies tend not to have much in the way of capital gains distributions. Income distributions.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, overall, you're looking at somewhere around a couple percent when you're talking about stock funds, but you're right. Maybe the small is smaller when it comes to dividends.
AVUV had paid a 1.68% okay. dividend. So
I was a little high there. Okay.
That's higher than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So you got to pay those. The key to the exchange traded fund from a taxation standpoint is, as we said, the reduction or completely doing away with the capital gains inside that fund. That's the advantage over a mutual fund. Big difference.
Thank you all for your questions. Thank you all for your patronage. Thank you all for listening. And thank you for sharing the podcast with friends and neighbors. We really appreciate you. And if you need a little bit of help from a real live fiduciary advisor, and you just need a little, we'll give you a little for free. We won't even try to sell you anything. Honest. We've been doing this for a long time. Not that the advisors love it, but hey, what the heck? We do, and we love doing it for you. And Tom's their boss, so it all works out. Just go to talkingrealmoney.com, click on Meet an Advisor, and we'll set up a time for you to meet an advisor and ask them some questions or say, hey, what does my portfolio look like? Or, hey, how much am I paying my non-fiduciary advisor? Or, hey, is this annuity a good thing to have in my 403B? Or whatever it might be, we'll do it. And we'll do it one-on-one for you and give you some time. You know,
and we'll give you honest, straightforward advice on all those things. Yeah, that's the good news. What you need. It's your money. Yeah. Pay attention.
So go to talkingrealmoney.com. Click on Meet an Advisor. Thank you all for being out there. We so appreciate you. And we are going to be here for as long as we can on an almost daily basis, except for an occasional vacation, doing this thing that is so important. That so few do, and that is talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone. This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction. Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services. Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast. And the lawyers get richer.